WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. That's right, I'm back. It's your host, Al Martin, here on this beautiful February 22nd, 2017 day here in mid-Michigan. That's right, it's Hump Day. Happy, happy Wednesday. I'm back after a bit of a food poisoning scare yesterday. Yeah, I'm staying away from seafood. I'll explain later on in the show, but it feels so good to be back and chatting with all of you out there. We've got a very entertaining hour of Current Sports in store for all of our listeners out there. On today's show, we will chat with Mr. David Harnes, Michigan State senior sports writer and editor for iSportsWeb. David has been following the Dr. Larry Nassar case pretty closely. He was actually in the house to witness the preliminary examination. I got a chance to chat with David early this morning. You'll get a chance to hear his thoughts and comments, and there is breaking news concerning the Dr. Nassar case that we will bring to you all in just a moment via our quick hit headliners. You don't want to miss that conversation. We will also chat about the University of Michigan men's basketball team. That's right, the Wolverines are one of those teams in the Big Ten placed on the bubble. And the Wolverines will play tonight out in New Jersey, taking on Rutgers, trying to bolster that resume before March Madness ensues. Do the Wolverines deserve to be in the big dance? We will try to answer that question, and we will also invite to the show later this hour Robert Ray Jr. and Nick Zugaro, both members of the Michigan State, get this, club basketball team. That should be a fun chat. And, of course, folks, it is senior night. Can you believe that? This week, after this week, both the Michigan State men's and women's basketball teams will play at the Breslin no more this year. Well, that's unless one of those teams make the NIT, because you guys know how the NIT works. If you play in the NIT, you do have a chance of hosting a game. But assuming that both of these teams do make the NCAA tourney, thinking positively here, this will be the final week to check out both Tom Izzo and Susie Merchant at the Breslin, all right? The women will wrap up things tonight, senior night, and one special player will be honored. We'll talk about that, and we will also talk briefly about all of the NBA trade deadline news. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a ton of stories that will come out before tomorrow at 3 p.m. when the deadline officially closes. If you want to be a part of our show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also join us via Facebook Live at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at WKAR_sports, or at my Twitter handle at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with the Michigan State women's basketball team. Tori Jankowska will play on the Breslin floor for her final time. That's right, in her collegiate career, as the Michigan State women's basketball team will play host to the Penn State Nittany Lions. A special ceremony will take place after the game for Tori Jankowska. She is the leading scorer, of course, in program history. And with two games remaining, she sits at 76 points behind Scott Skiles in total points scored, wearing a green and white jersey. How cool is that, right? Gender aside there, right? Her current scoring total is 2,069 points.
I can't even put into words how this journey has been for me. It's been extremely special being able to play at Michigan State and live out my dream. And that's really all I've been wanting to do since I was five. all the points and the rebounds and the assists, it just comes with the territory, I guess. You want to be able to be a good player. If you're as competitive as I am, you want to be the best no matter what.
Yeah, she wants to be the best no matter what, and you can make a compelling argument that she is the best. We all know she's one of the best, but you can make the argument that she is the best women's basketball player to ever come across the program. We'll chat about Tori's impact throughout her years here in East Lansing later on this hour. The Michigan men's basketball team will head to the East Coast to face Rutgers tonight. That's right, out in New Jersey. Now, after an icy cold three-pointer by DJ Wilson to force overtime against Minnesota, the Wolverines, though, couldn't stop Minnesota's Jordan Murphy. The Wolverines lost to the Golden Gophers, snapping a three-game win streak at the Maize and Blue Hat. Now, Michigan currently has a 17-10 record, 7-7 in the Big Ten Conference. Rutgers is having a tough year, to say the least. They hold the worst Big Ten record of 2-13. And get this, Rutgers is actually 5-48 in the Big Ten Conference since joining the conference back in 2014. 5-28. On a much lighter note,
the timing was right. It was right for me to put my businesses aside and really concentrate on Laker business, try to build an organization that the fans can be proud of, build a winning culture around the Laker organization, both on the court and in the offices, re-energize everybody that works for the Laker organization, and make sure our fans understand that, you know, we're here to win.
That's right. Pretty big news there. Irvin Magic Johnson, Lansing's favorite son, is back in L.A. with the Los Angeles Lakers. News broke yesterday around this same time that Magic will serve as the president of basketball operations for the Lakers. The Lakers also announced that GM Mitch Kupchak has been relieved of his duties. The Hall of Famer in Magic has 5 NBA championships. We know the resume. 3 MVPs, 12 All-Star appearances in 13 seasons. With the trade deadline ending at 3 p.m. tomorrow, the Lake Show have already shipped guard Lou Williams to Houston for Corey Brewer and a first-round pick. Now, Magic is also part owner of the L.A. Dodgers and the 2016 WNBA champion L.A. Sparks. A very busy man. He just got a lot more busy with this new gig. All right. Unfortunate news here. 23 new alleged sexual assault charges have been filed against Dr. Larry Nassar. The Lansing State Journal reports that the alleged assaults occurred during medical appointments that included procedures involving. Yeah, you guys know the details. I won't go into the details right now because we're going to have David Harnes on the show in just a moment. But since the Indianapolis Star broke the story in September about the alleged sexual assaults, more than 60 women have reported to law enforcement that Nassar had sexually assaulted them. Now, more than 40 women have filed lawsuits against MSU, Nassar, USA Gymnastics, and Twist Stars Gymnastics Club based in Diamonddale, Michigan. Nassar was fired from Michigan State in September and relieved from USA Gymnastics in the fall of 2015. A brief rundown of Tuesday night high school hoops for you. Lansing Sexton boys top Grand Ledge 54-50. Lansing Everett got a big win on the road against Okemos 57-43. Holt topped Jackson 76-61. And oh yeah, the East Lansing Trojans remain undefeated, beating Lansing Eastern by 30 points, 83-53. The Trojans, 17-0, and I believe that there's no doubt on anyone's mind that the Trojans are the best team in our area. It just continues. And with that win for East Lansing, they officially clinch the outright CAAC Blue Championship. I got a chance to catch that snippet last night on the news with head coach Steve Finnemore. So congratulations to Coach Steve Finnemore and his team. Wow, they just keep on keeping on. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, after enjoying a small two-game win streak, the Red Wings are back on the losing side. Last night, the Wings hosted the New York Islanders at the Joe and lost 3-1. Henrik Zetterberg scored on the power play with 1 minute remaining in the first period. But one goal isn't enough.
Mrazek gave it away right to Bailey. He scored.
Good
Oh, boy. The Wings outshot the Islanders by 5, but were outhit by 19. They sit at 58 points on the year, second last in the Eastern Conference. And, hey, how about this news, right? Last week, the Detroit Pistons center, Andre Drummond, and Reggie Jackson, guard, were potential names on the way out of the Palace, right? But with the trade deadline closing at 3 tomorrow, a report says that Drummond won't go anywhere. The McMahon was potentially linked to the Boston Celtics. However, the deal was never completed. The Celtics have the Brooklyn Nets 2017 first-round pick, which could turn into the number one overall pick. Who knows? The Celtics are trying to grab another star to compete with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East, and Drummond was among a list of names which included the Chicago Bulls guard Jimmy Butler, Pacers guard Paul George, and Clippers forward Blake Griffin. Now, the initial Drummond to Celtics link happened when Celtics' Isaiah Thomas tweeted an emoji eyes, which Drummond retweeted and then tweeted a pair of emoji eyes himself. Yeah, last time Thomas tweeted out emoji eyes, you guys remember what happened? Grand Ledge native Al Horford was signed to the Celtics. And last but certainly not least, the Detroit Tigers minor league pitcher Miles Jay will start in the exhibition opener against Florida Southern tomorrow. That wraps up your headliners. Let's start the show.
What can you share with us that led you to this point?
Well, first of all, I think that coming back just to the organization that I love, the Lakers. And then I've known this woman who has been put in charge by her father, Jeannie Buss. And when we sat down for dinner and she asked me to come back, I think the timing was right. It was right for me to put my businesses aside and really concentrate on Laker business. Try to build an organization that the fans can be proud of, build a winning culture around the Laker organization, both on the court and in the offices, re-energize everybody that works for the Laker organization, and make sure our fans understand that, you know, we're here to win. Jeannie has always dedicated her life to winning and to making sure that the Laker fans are happy with the product that's on the floor. And with her leadership and her brothers and her sister, we're going to make sure that happens. And we have the right coach with Luke Walton, and we have a lot of great young players that we can build and make sure we develop, and hopefully they'll turn into the stars that we think they can become.
That's a classic right there, Mr. Phil Collins. Take Me Home. That's one of my favorite joints of all time there. Welcome, 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 ladies and gents, boys and girls, to this Wednesday afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, back behind the mic after taking Tuesday off due to some bad seafood, man. I just had some bad seafood on Monday night that did not agree with my stomach. It was bad, folks. So I will be staying away from fish, shrimp, scallops, oysters, anything that swims. I will not be eating it for quite some time. That's all I'm saying. Glad to be back, though. Thank you so much to engineer Isaac Constance for holding down the fort yesterday
And Isaac pitched in. You know, I let him know around because I really thought I was going to try to MJ it. You know, MJ back in 98 or 97, one of those years when he had the flu. I was just going to say, you know what? I'm going in. I don't care. I don't care if I'm sick. I'll have a bucket right next to me as I do current sports. But no, my body was not too fond of that idea. So I text Isaac and I said, you know what, man, I can't go. Can you pitch in or at least let's run an encore? If you can't, man, I totally understand. And I didn't get a chance to hear yesterday's show because after I shot that text to Isaac, you know, I went on social media for a second and then I said, I'm going to bed. So I didn't get a chance to listen or to chime in on yesterday's show, but I assume you did well, my man. But first off, Thank you to you. That was big, man. Thank you for pinch hitting yesterday.
Oh, you know, I'm always happy to. And I'm fortunate because it is the NBA trade deadline coming up.
Yeah.
Never a difficult thing to talk about, especially for you and I basketball heads.
That is true. You know, when I thought to myself, knowing Isaac, the NBA head that he is, he probably spent most of the show talking about all the trade rumors
and
DeMarcus Cousins and so on and so forth. And, yeah, we'll be talking about that later on in the hour. I know you probably spent a lot of time on it yesterday. A lot of moves are still rumored to be made before the deadline, which will ensue. I should say, which will stop on Thursday at 3 p.m. And I'll weigh in a bit on it because I do have a lot to say about it. We'll dedicate most of the show. Well, not most of the show, but a good portion of the show on Thursday to the trade deadline. And we'll address the Detroit Pistons, of course. But I want to start with that snippet because breaking news. When Current Sports is actually on the air, I put this in the headliners yesterday for Isaac, and I assume he saw it just in time, but Magic Johnson, Irvin Magic Johnson, again, Lansing's favorite son, Magic being named as the president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Lakers, which this is a franchise that has been lost for quite some time. So I thought it would be kind of cool to intermix a snippet of Phil Collins's Take Me Home, because Magic and ideally is coming home, right? I mean, L.A. was his home for quite some time. The house that Magic built, 5 NBA championships, 3 MVPs, 12 All-Star appearances, one of the greatest ballers of all time. And quick trivia, Isaac, before we roll in our first guest for today, you being a huge hip-hop head just like myself, can you tell me who actually sampled that Phil Collins track?
No, I cannot.
Bone Thugs and Harmony, my man, sampled
Phil
Collins.
I love that group, too. I'm ashamed about that. Yeah,
they're one of the greatest of all time. But, yeah, Bone Thugs actually sampled Phil Collins' Take Me Home. But, yeah, Magic Johnson returning home to become the Lakers' president of basketball operations. And you know what? I like the moves they're making already. I mean, Magic is wasting no time in getting his hands dirty. I mean, shipping out Lou Williams, getting Corey Brewer in return. And get this, I really like this idea because ideally it follows the same model of the Golden State Warriors who hired former agent Bob Myers as GM. But the Lakers have hired prominent player agent Rob Pelinka as GM. Don't know if you guys saw that news that broke. Rob Pelinka, a huge name when it comes to sports agents out there. He was a longtime agent for Lakers superstar Kobe Bryant. And, you know, Pelinka was a strong advocate to owner Jeannie Buss toward the hiring of Magic Johnson. So Pelinka and Magic both have a very close relationship. So I think this could be a model that you may see a lot of other NBA teams try to emulate. So nonetheless, though, I think Magic's going to do a great job. I mean, heck, you can't do a worse job than what the Lakers have done since the glory days, right? They haven't been good for quite some time, even though I do believe that the Lakers do have a solid core of young talent. I do believe this team is on the up and up, but they got to make some moves here. And this was a great move in hiring Irvin Magic Johnson. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We are taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. We've got a slew of guests that will be coming on the show. And in just a moment, I want to get to a chat that I actually had this morning with David Harnes, who is a Michigan State Sports senior writer and editor for iSportsWeb. David has been following the Dr. Larry Nassar case. He was actually in the courtroom for the preliminary examination. I chatted with David around 8 a.m. this morning. I've been here for quite some time here at the studio, And that, of course, it's, but the reason why I'm putting that time frame in perspective is because, again, you guys know that according to our headliners, not too long ago, news broke that 23 new alleged sexual assault charges had been filed against Dr. Larry Nassar. So I conducted this interview hours prior to that news. So I want to get to that in just a second. But hey, let's take a call. Why not? We got a caller on line one right now. I don't see a name in the rundown. I do see a name. Thank you, Isaac. Dave from Wyoming that wants to chime in about Irvin Magic Johnson returning home to L.A. Dave, how you doing?
Well, doing fine, and hope you're feeling better.
Thank you so much, Dave. That means a lot, my friend.
Nothing is more miserable than food poisoning.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't keep anything down. I mean, not to make our listeners sick out there, but I just couldn't keep anything down, Dave. But
well, you're in that balance point. I've had it, too.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You think you're going to die, and then you're afraid you're not.
There was a moment yesterday. There was a moment, Dave, and it sucks. It's just my dog. I just live with my dog. I live alone with my dog. My dog's sitting there saying, "What in the world is happening right now?"
Yeah.
Oh,
my goodness. Your dog's wondering if he can dial 911.
Yeah,
so
right?
Be able to feed him.
I was hoping that maybe my dog would turn into Lassie at that point, but yeah. Sure.
Anyway, some quick thoughts about the NBA and specifically Magic. One, you know, they talked about the Pistons possibly making a trade. But don't you think there's probably only about four or five teams in all the NBA right now who are in a position to make a big bombastic trade that's going to make a difference? I mean, right now, what good does a trade for the Pistons do except for the future? I mean,
yeah.
If the Pistons trade right now, if it was, you know, a significant trade to help them win more, what are they going to be, an eighth seed maybe?
Right. I see what you're talking about. Right.
It might help them get to the second round after they play the first seed. Probably not. Lakers, I don't even think are in the playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the move that they made, I thought was the Magic and Palenka already made was good because they got a first round draft choice out of it, I think.
Yep.
I mean, so hey, if somebody's dangling a first rounder and you've got to rebuild, now's the time to go. But I think I wouldn't be surprised to sort of see them sit pat or, you know, watch somebody sell the farm and give them more top-round draft choices. But now NBA is also a cap league, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Well,
because, I mean, with the new deals with the TV contracts, Isaac, I mean, it is. But the thing is, even though it's a cap league, that money has ideally made it not a cap league.
It ballooned a year ago. It's ballooning again.
The cap is continuing to rise. It's going to be even more next season. So, I mean, the money that's being thrown around is ridiculous at this point.
But at this point in time, you look at the Lakers roster, and they really sort of blew the free agent thing last time. I think they dumped right between $130 and $140 million on two players. I can't remember who they are, which is not good. And so I would suspect that Magic Johnson and Palenka are going to sort of sit pat, you know, sit tight. And as the draft comes up, if there are people who want a deal, then it's going to be the time to trade. But they don't want to get hamstrung on bad contracts. And wouldn't be surprised to see them try to peddle some bad contracts as well between now and then. Because, you know, hey, this season was as competitive as Magic Johnson and Palenka are. It's gone, and I guess the last point I'll make is I thought it was a good move because Palenka's L.A.-based. His wife happens to be a practicing doctor in the L.A. area.
Oh, wow, I didn't know
Magic,
that. Yeah.
Magic's been L.A.-based for years, yeah. I mean, what's his name? Palenka started off with a Chicago law firm, went to Arne Tellem, who's now with the Pistons, I believe, and then started his own agent business called Landmark out in L.A. a few years back. And he's had, you know, some good high-level people, including Kobe Bryant on there. But he's L.A.-based. He understands the culture. Magic's L.A.-based. He understands the culture. And I think it really is going to take two people like that to try to rebuild what Jerry Buss with Jerry West did way back. I would personally like to see them dangle cash in front of Jerry West and get him back as an advisor as he was with the Golden State, as he is right now where he is up. I can't remember the franchise he's with, but right now he's working as an advisor with another franchise. Jerry West has proven he knows how to build winners as well, and he's got good input. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate that. And I think you made a lot of great points, Darren, when you talk about, especially with Pelinka. I mean, yeah, we bring up the big name, the biggest name out of those he's represented throughout his career in Kobe Bryant. But, I mean, he also represents James Harden, Eric Gordon, Avery Bradley, among 20 other clients, right? I mean, he has so much pull in the NBA, and he knows talent. Simple as that. So I think that Pelinka and Magic are both going to do a great job, and Pelinka will answer directly to Irvin Magic Johnson. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's bring up our first chat on our airwaves today. It's a heavy one. As I chatted with David Harnes, Michigan State senior sports writer and editor for iSports Web. I chatted with David around 8 a.m. this morning. He was busy today and couldn't come on the show live. But I wanted to bring David on the show because David was actually at the preliminary examination for former Michigan State doctor Larry Nassar, who, as we announced in our quick hit headliners, is facing 23 new sexual assault charges. Again, Nassar's name has been linked, of course, not only with Michigan State, but also USA Gymnastics, as well as Twist Stars Gymnastics Club in Diamonddale, Michigan. Over 40 women and girls are filing lawsuits against Dr. Nassar. It has been a story that has reached national headlines. Got the chance to watch the 60 Minutes special that was aired nationally. I watched it on Monday. It aired over the weekend. Watched it on Monday, and it really attacked the Nassar case from the USA Gymnastics perspective. And I just really couldn't believe, like many of you out there who have heard this story, I really couldn't believe what took place, what allegedly took place for so long. So I invited David to Current Sports, and I want to roll in this interview with David Harnes, again, of iSports Web. And I first had to ask David, what was his reaction when he first heard about the Dr. Larry Nassar investigation and how long he's been following this story as we continue to learn more and more by the day, it feels like. Here's how that chat went.
So I've been following the story since the Indy Star broke it back in September. I wasn't following it as kind of a writer up until maybe last month or so. For a while there, it was a horrible story that I was just kind of following as a dad, as a member of the community. And then when it kind of turned in on Michigan State and kind of started looking like there might be some, you know, Michigan State, you know, ties or what have you to it, that's when I kind of started looking at it as a story to follow and to cover.
David, I have to know, because I actually was sitting back watching WLNS TV 6 last night, and they wrote in footage, actually, excuse me, of the preliminary examination. I actually saw you in the courtroom in the back, I believe, when that was taking place. Can you sort of set the scene as to what that moment was like, seeing Larry Nassar come out in a jumpsuit in handcuffs? A riveting moment.
Yeah, it was. And it was kind of one of those scenarios. You see the pictures of him, and you kind of, you know, he's wearing a suit and a tie and all of those things, and then you see him come into the courtroom in a jumpsuit and handcuffs and let in by by the court, the member of the court there, and it was interesting just to watch him throughout the entire time there, because he was stone faced the whole time. I didn't see an expression change once, and I kind of, you know, kept looking at him just to see if the testimony that was being given, if there was going to be any reaction at all, and there wasn't, not at all.
When that testimony took place, David, can you walk us through what took place? I know it was very graphic and very detailed.
Yeah, and I don't know how much detail you really want to get into, but you know, the court first, you know, the judge first, you know, had to decide, you know, how many media were going to be present, how many cameras are going to be present, because the young lady that testified, she was a victim of sexual assault. And so, of course, you know, most people's policies to not name, you know, victims of sexual assault. And the court wanted to make sure that she felt comfortable in there testifying and everything. So, you know, there was a lot of that at the beginning. But then when she came in, you know, she kind of got right into it. And the prosecution, the state prosecution, I think, is the assistant AG, basically led her down the testimony track of, you know, tell us what happened to you. And she recounted with vivid detail, you know, sexual abuse from the time she was 5 or 6 to, you know, it ended by the time she was in 6th grade. And, you know, if you tell me how much detail you want, and I'm happy to go into it, but just suffice it to say that it was not good. It was very bad. And a lot of it happened in his, Nassar's, basement. There were family friends, who would go over, and the kids would be in the basement, and, there would be games of hide and seek that would turn into, times of sexual abuse. And there were times where they're sitting on the couch, and, Nassar would, you know, sexually abuse her, sitting just right on the couch watching TV with her brother nearby. So, you know, that's the probably the tamest way to say it, but, you know, there's more details out there if somebody really kind of wants to know the degree, you know, to which it is being prosecuted. I mean, the state's case is that, you know, Larry Nassar should be found guilty of 3 counts of criminal sexual conduct, and with a minor under the age of 13. And those are the, of all of the details we heard in the trial, the pretrial hearing, those were actually the only counts that still had the statute of limitations available. The statute of limitations hadn't expired yet. So those, the 3 instances of penetration with his finger, that those are the 3 counts that he was bound over for trial on. The rest of the testimony, you know, described other sexual assault that didn't involve penetration, but none of those, you know, had the statute of limitations had run out on those.
So during that preliminary examination, of course, that testimony was to figure out whether or not there was enough evidence for this to go to trial. Am I right?
Yep, that's correct. And basically what it came down to was, did the judge find the witness credible? And that was the defense's main, you know, case, is that this isn't a credible, you know, witness slash victim. She's not credible. She didn't show enough emotion at the times when she was talking about the abuse. She only showed emotions when she was talking about, you know, how she loved the Nassar kids, 'cause she babysat for them and those types of things. And at the end, the judge decided that she was credible. There was enough evidence to head to trial. Now, of course, that doesn't mean he's guilty. It means that there's enough evidence to head to trial. And at trial, I'm sure there'll be more, you know, more witnesses, more from both sides, the prosecution and the defense. And remember, this is just one case, one trial. He's going to be in court many, many, many times over the next several years to you know, face all of the charges against him.
Yeah, and I actually saw, I'm not sure if you saw it, David, I assume you did, but the 60 Minutes piece that was put together this past weekend, I watched it on Monday night, actually. And, you know, you look at the amount of women that are coming out, and the piece pretty much centered on Nassar's abuse within the realm of USA Gymnastics and not so much Michigan State University. But to see the numbers here, I mean, we're talking about over 60 women and girls that are alleging that Dr. Nassar was involved in some type of abuse here. What type of a dark cloud does this paint on Michigan State University in your eyes, David?
Well, that's the question that we're all kind of trying to get to, right, is who knew what and when did they know it, and who should have you know, stood up and said something. And I've been learning a lot throughout this process. You know, as a dad, I have a vested interest in learning how to make sure this doesn't happen to my kids and the kids of the community and their friends, and kind of trying to learn that process. You know, what causes somebody like Larry Nassar to go undetected for decades? And, you know, to be fair, I've said this before, I said, you know, I'm not going to let anybody at MSU off the hook if they had knowledge and should have come forward with it. But I'm also not going to go into the camp of fire them all, you know, shame everybody who ever, you know, was associated with him because they should have known. Because what I'm learning is that that's just not the way it works. You know, Larry Nassar, like Jerry Sandusky, would both be considered kind of, you know, pillars of the community. That's kind of the phrase that if you kind of Google that, you can kind of learn about that. And, you know, their job is to gain trust. And when I say job, I don't mean actual job. I'm saying in order to get away with, you know, sexually abusing kids or people, their job is to gain trust of the people who are in charge of those kids. And by doing so, they are able to kind of operate under the cover of trust. And, you know, it's unfortunate that lesson didn't come from the Penn State scandal. That would have been probably one of the better lessons to have taken from that, is that we all really need to be more vigilant in looking for these clues and looking for these things that, you know, when you look back, you look at them and you say, man, why didn't I see that? You know, we have to be more vigilant. We have to be more willing and ready to kind of speak up. And, you know, that's the question. At Michigan State, were there people who knew? You know, I haven't found any evidence yet that says that somebody knew for sure that this was happening and didn't do anything about it. But if you take into consideration the fact that certain people were told, hey, this is happening to me, and they couldn't believe it because they know this man outside of his profession. They know him as a person. They knew him as a friend. And that's why they didn't turn him in. You know, that goes right back to that pillar of the community scenario where, you know, you can't believe that the guy sitting next to you, you know, is a guy who can do that. And we have to get to the point where, you know, you let law enforcement make those decisions. You don't make those decisions. And so, you know, what you ask the question, what is this, how does this cast of, you know, a pall on Michigan State? And I'd say let's take our time. Let's let it play out, and let's see, you know, what the investigation finds. You know, if there's anybody who should have, you know, who's like a mandated reporter who should have, you know, and they were made aware of the charges, they should have, you know, let somebody know about it. Then they will, you know, they will have their day in court. And I just hope that you know, we as a community are able to learn from this, and we're able to become you know, better at seeing these types of things before they, you know, get this bad and somebody can, you know, call the police when they first notice it. And I think that would be a good takeaway, you know, for these heinous crimes that have been happening without, you know, us even kind of realizing it in our community.
And David, I know we're pressed for time, but a follow-up to that answer, Kathy Klages, Michigan State, now former women's gymnastics coach, you know, she stepped down last week, and we know the circumstances surrounding around that. I mean, her name is named in the report as possibly alleging that she discouraged a gymnast to not say anything. With that being said, I mean, how do you assess Coach Klages' involvement in this case?
So that's another one of those scenarios where, you know, she gave an impassioned defense of Larry Nassar at a team gymnastics meeting. That's via a letter from Mark Hollis. And what that shows you is that she truly, you know, at least according to her and her lawyer, she truly didn't believe that this man could do those things. And her actions kind of bore that out. You know, she didn't believe it when her athletes told her that these things were happening. You know, she said that they must be misunderstanding it. Now, you know, we look back now and we say, you know, how could she not have seen that? You know, and as a coach and as a teacher or whatever the case may be, you know, if you're made aware of allegations like that, you are a mandated reporter. You need to go to the police and you need to say something about it. So I'm not here to convict her. I'm not here to, you know, I'm certainly not a judge or a jury, but, you know, that's the case against her, is that she was told about this and that she didn't do the right thing at the time to prevent it from happening to other people.
David, final question for you. Where are we at right now with the case? I understand that today at 2:30 p.m., the media and the public will be updated on where things stand with the Larry Nassar case.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the next, you know, the next update is just to take a look at that. If you want to follow the coverage for this, you know, I add a little bit here and there. I'm not at all an expert on the case. If you want to know who, follow the Lansing State Journal's coverage. Matt Mencarini, I believe, is his last name.
Mm-hmm.
He's been following the case since September, and he's been digging and reporting. And every time I see any video of any coverage, you know, he's there in the background and doing his thing. So I would follow him for updates, and I'm sure he'll be at the press conference this afternoon.
Much thanks to David Harnes of iSports Web for his input when it comes to the Dr. Larry Nassar case. And Matt Mencarini of the Lansing State Journal, he is the journalist who put out the latest update as Larry Nassar is facing 23 new sexual assault charges. And as I mentioned during that chat, in less than an hour from now at 2:30 p.m., Attorney General Bill Schuette will talk to reporters to update everyone on the Dr. Larry Nassar case. We will have our very own Kevin Lavery, current state, and other members of the current state team in the House to bring reports on tomorrow's current sports concerning this case and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with members of the Michigan State Club basketball team. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Mr. David Harnes, Michigan State senior sports writer and editor for iSports Web, as David has been following the Dr. Larry Nassar investigation. He was there at the preliminary examination, which ruled that, yeah, there was enough evidence to at least bring that count of sexual assault to trial. Again, folks, if you want to chime in on just everything that's taken place, away from MSU athletics when it comes to the Dr. Larry Nassar case, of course, the MSU football sexual assault investigation. And, you know, I've been told by a little birdie out there that we will know the names of those three Michigan State football players sometime this week. I just was told by a little birdie. I can't confirm that, but someone has told me that with pretty credible credentials, I should say. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I also want to pose this question to you all out there. It's one that was on my mind as I woke up this morning, just kind of looking at the entire Big Ten college basketball landscape. But I want to know your thoughts on the Michigan men's basketball team as well. An interesting case can be made for the Wolverines that they do deserve to be in the big dance for March Madness. Now, again, they lost in overtime to Minnesota on Sunday due to a lot of bad calls, in my opinion. It went to overtime, a big three-pointer that sent it to overtime. John Beilein, who you don't really see flip his wig quite often, but he did during the post-game presser. He was so annoyed with the calls in that game that he actually sent certain calls of that game to the Big Ten office this week. He was a bit perturbed at Minnesota, shooting 41 free throws throughout that game. Yes, count them, 41. Yeah, 41 free throws and 27 personal fouls were called on Michigan. And hey, prior to Sunday, if you look at Michigan's resume right now, they were rolling on a three-game win streak, to be exact, starting with that Michigan State win at Chrysler. Then they beat Indiana. Then they beat one of the top dogs in the Big Ten Conference in Wisconsin, which is right now the second-ranked team in the Big Ten. So Michigan will most likely get back on track tonight. I pretty much, you could probably take that one to the bank, right, Isaac? I mean, they're playing Rutgers right now, a team that's 5, this is so embarrassing to say this, 5-48 in the Big Ten Conference since joining the Big Ten Conference back in 2014. Are you kidding me? Rutgers, I'm pretty sure Rutgers is sitting there saying, now, why in the world did we join this conference?
We can say this, when an athletic program, their best boast is of Ray Rice still to this day.
Exactly.
There's a problem.
Very. I totally agree with you. All right, let's get to our next two guests for today's Current Sports. This is going to be a fun interview because we've reported on them in the past. We've had a Current Sports beat reporter actually do a story on this squad. But right now, we have two representatives from the Michigan State University club basketball team here live in Studio S. We've got Robert Ray Jr. and Nick Zugaro here to chat about MSU Club Hoops. First off, Robert and Nick, how you guys doing? And thanks so much for joining us here.
Doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Robert.
Doing good. Thanks for having us on the show.
I want to start by talking about just the team in general, because when I graduated Michigan State in 2012, and I love basketball. I played pickup at IM West as much as I could throughout my undergrad career. And I always wondered to myself why Michigan State did not have a club basketball team. I'll start with Robert on this question. First off, how long has the squad been going on, and how did it begin?
So this is only our second year as an official club team. It kind of began with the core group of guys that started the club team kind of being on the same IM teams and dominating for years. And then Ross Winter, the IM director, we went and participated in a club basketball tournament as an intramural team. And we were actually really competitive, playing against other teams who had coaches and who were practicing. And he suggested that we actually take that momentum and use it to start an actual club basketball team here at Michigan State.
Very cool stuff. And what year are you here at Michigan State, Robert?
I'm a second-year medical student.
What about you, Nick?
I'm a junior.
You're a junior. What are you studying?
Finance.
Why did you want to play on the team? And how long have you been a part of the team since last year?
Yeah, I've been a part of the team since last year. And I met Rob my freshman year here when he was a senior, I believe. And just playing pickup and playing IM and things like that. And I just remember getting a text from him saying, you know, I started a club basketball team. Are you interested in playing? And it's no-brainer on my part. So I don't know.
I want to know your hoop backgrounds as well. Where are you guys from and what high school did you – I'm assuming you guys played high school ball, right? Nick, where are you from and what high school did you go to?
I'm from Novi, and I went to Novi High School.
You went to Novi. Okay, right. Were you pretty good? Were you scouted at all?
I was not scouted at all. I only played my senior year due to some injuries, but
– Okay, still, but you played organized basketball before.
Correct.
Cool stuff. What about you, Robert?
I'm from Lansing, and I went to Sexton High School.
You went to Lansing Sexton High School, so you're a local kid here. When did you graduate?
2011.
I probably covered Robert then, because I started covering high school basketball here as an intern during my college years. That's very cool. So let me think here. Did you play under the tutelage of Carlton Valentine?
I did.
You did. That is very cool. So did you play alongside Denzel at all?
I did.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to start with that real quickly, Nick, because that's a pretty big revelation right now. You play with Denzel, I'm assuming with Bryn, as well as Anthony Clemens as well.
Jalen Hayes, yep.
So you won a state championship with that team. I mean, what was that like for you?
That was really exciting for me. I actually, since we were so talented, I didn't play until varsity year. And I just, you know, progressively got better and then made the team my senior year. And so I didn't see the floor a whole lot my senior year with those guys. But just being around that team and around that winning environment, and as you mentioned, Coach Valentine, and I mean, he still to this day is one of my mentors. He's such a great coach.
He's great, isn't he? And you look at it, you got Sapp and Anthony Clemens. He's overseas as a professional basketball player.
I think he's in Turkey.
He's in Turkey, I believe, as well. Yeah, and Denzel is in the NBA, as well as Bryn Forbes is in the NBA with the Spurs, Denzel with the Chicago Bulls. How crazy is that, right?
It's pretty crazy to think about. I mean, practicing with those guys. We had some pretty intense practices. because we had some other guys who came off the bench that, you know, went D2 or to smaller schools or are still playing, and we just had so much talent on that team, and it
pretty
was
remarkable.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Pretty remarkable. Nick, for you, being on this squad, can you tell us a little bit about the season? How does the season layout work? How many games do you play? What are the playoffs? What do those things entail? And what's the record right now as well?
Yeah, so currently we're 15-0. So currently we're 15-0. So we're doing something right. And we're in the NCBBA, which is the National Club Basketball Association.
Okay.
There's about 50 something teams in there. So in our division, we got us, Michigan, Central, Western, Purdue, Bowling Green, and Butler.
Impressive.
So we play each team three times for a total of 18 games during the regular season.
And you guys are undefeated right now.
We're 15-0 currently, yes.
Wow, I got to know how the rest of the standings look right now. I mean, who's right in back of you guys?
Yeah, so Purdue is 14-1, and we play them this weekend for essentially the division.
Wow, so yeah. The season will be wrapping up pretty soon here, right?
The regular season ends this weekend, and then if things go well, we have regionals in a few weeks, and then nationals in a couple weeks after that.
Where will regionals be?
Regionals are hosted by the winner of our division or the higher ranked team of the winner of the other division.
Right.
So the other division goes like Ohio State, Kentucky, some of those schools, and it's looking like Ohio State's going to win that division.
Okay.
And currently they're higher ranked than us, so they'll probably be at Ohio State.
So this is very well organized, very professional. And you guys are out there having fun and playing the game you love. Robert, for you, I know when we put together our first story, you were very instrumental in making this thing happen. I know. You reached out to, I believe, Sean Hankins.
Yes.
Who is he still an assistant coach at Lansing Eastern?
He's not. No.
He's not.
Last year was his last year.
Talk about, is Sean still coaching you guys?
Yes.
Talk about when you reached out to Sean and getting him to convincing him to come along and coach you all. What was that conversation like?
It was a pretty easy conversation, actually, easier than I thought it would be. I've known Sean since I started going to school for undergrad here, and Sean's been kind of one of the legends at IM West. Him and a few other guys, they kind of run the table at IM West throughout the years. And so I learned a lot from them, just playing with them, and, you know, they kind of coached me just in pickup and, you know, just making me a better player. And all the guys kind of knew who Sean was and had a good relationship, and he had a background in coaching, and it just seemed like a perfect fit. And so I texted him and asked him if we could meet about it. And the meeting, within like 30 seconds, he said that he would do it. And ever since then, he's so excited to do it. So it works for everybody.
Nick, what's it like playing for Coach Hankins?
Oh, he's an awesome coach and an awesome guy. I mean, he's so passionate about what we're trying to do, and it's just amazing because I don't think a lot of club coaches, I mean, especially club basketball coaches, aren't like him. So he's just a gift for us.
What's the level of competition like? I have to ask this as well because, you know, you look at, I mean, here in the area, we look at and we cover Michigan State men's basketball, and we see the fierceness of Division I college athletics. I'm pretty sure it's not that level, but at the same time, it's still organized competitive basketball collegiately. So I have to know, comparing it to what, your high school days, compared to club basketball, what's the level of competition like? We'll start with Nick.
I'd say it's a little bit better than that, a little bit better than high school days. I mean, I guess it depends where you play and where you come from, but
right.
Yeah, I'd say it's above high school in terms of...
In what way? Physicality? Is it just more competitive? Just internally? What is it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, guys are older, more athletic,
a little more
a little more talent overall. I think that's the main thing.
What about for you, Robert?
I would have to agree. So we come from different places, but so like obviously we wouldn't beat my high school team because we were stacked.
Right, yeah,
but a lot of the teams in the conference, I think we would definitely beat them. So I think overall guys are more talented, more mature. And more athletic, like he said. But I would say right in between college and high school, there is a kind of a drop-off. There's some really good teams, like at Nationals.
Right.
All the games are close. Last year, we were in the Final Four, and we lost in overtime, and then the championship game went to overtime, too.
What? Are you kidding me?
And so it's just, like, at the top is the top, and then there's a little bit of a drop-off, and there's some bad teams, but for the most part, it's pretty competitive.
Talk about parity, right? Oh, my goodness. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we only have about 4 minutes left here in the show, but we are talking with two players of the Michigan State Club basketball team, Robert Ray Jr. and Nick Zugaro. I have to ask you guys before we get out of here, when you look at, again, only the second year for this team, but when you look at just your tenure so far, I mean, and you guys are undefeated. First off, how did you guys finish last year for our listeners out there?
We lost in the final
four. What's the regular season record?
16-2.
Yep. 16-2. You've only lost two regular season games in the last 2 years. That's pretty darn good. What is the identity of your team?
That's
a heavy question. Yeah,
we focus a lot on defense and rebounding.
Okay.
Kind of like how Michigan State varsity does. And Sean definitely, or Coach Hankins definitely, drills that into our practices and in our heads. Offensively, we kind of flow naturally because we play a lot together. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of motion and dribble drive and look to go inside out. And
so you try like to do you guys try to duplicate a lot of what Tom Izzo does down the street at the Breslin?
Yeah,
their
staples are defense and rebounding, so that's something right. that I think any basketball team should try to duplicate. So yeah, we definitely try to do that. We're not at that level yet, though.
Of course, well, 11.
we're trying to get there.
11-man roster, right? 11-man roster for you guys, right?
We have 13.
13-man roster. I think it was 11-man last year, I believe, if I read it correctly. Correct. If there are any listeners out there that are interested and want to come out maybe next year for a tryout to see if they can make the roster, how can they do so, guys?
So tryouts will be in the fall. Usually, I think this year it was in the third week of the fall. So sometime in September, you can find us on Twitter at MSU Club Basket B. We have an email, msuclubbasketball@hotmail.com, and we also have a Facebook. If you search MSU Club Basketball on Facebook, you can find us there, and we'll post things throughout the year.
Nick Zugaro and Robert Ray Jr. of the Michigan State Club basketball team. Fellas, keep us updated on how things roll along when it comes to the postseason, okay? And we'll be sure to let our listeners know. How's that sound?
Sounds good to us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys. You guys were awesome. All right. Well, we have just a minute left here on the show. Isaac, it is senior night for the Michigan State women's basketball team. I'll be out there covering it, and we'll be putting together a feature for the Current Sports 2-Minute Drill. Michigan State will play Penn State. Penn State is in fourth place in the Big Ten, an overall record of 18-18, 8-6 in the Big Ten. There's a four-way tie, actually, for fourth place. So that includes Michigan State, Penn State, Indiana, and Purdue. All teams have an identical 8-6 record in the conference. Michigan State has won 3 of the last 5 in the contest, but the Nittany Lions hold a 28-16 record overall between those two squads. Torrey Jankowska, again, broke the field goal record, three-point field goal record for Michigan State this past weekend with currently 297 three-pointers in her career. She will be honored tonight. She is, again, the program's leading scorer as well. Any final thoughts, Isaac?
No, just hoping that tonight she can go out with a Breslin bang, so we'll see if that can happen.
Only time will tell. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and as always, be easy, people.